veteran is someone who at one point in their life wrote a blank check made payable to the United States of America for an amount up to and including their life.
So I was in the Army from 1987 to 1992.
I served 24 years as a soldier.
Became a Navy hospital corpsman in 1967.
Served active duty in the Army from 1988 to 1996.
Went to the Marine Corps from 2010 to 2014.
Active duty Air Force from 77 to 1983.
Front in Vietnam, 1971, year in the jungle.
Welcome to Common Valor. Real stories from those who served in America's military, brought to you by VetFlix, a leader in documenting and sharing the veteran experience. Today's story was part of a veteran workshop celebration hosted at the Currier Museum of Art in Manchester, New Hampshire. Over 3 months, veterans prepared their stories and then delivered them to a live audience.
Bill Donahue became a hospital corpsman in the Navy in 1967. He served, helping repair broken bodies in an OR at the Philadelphia Naval Hospital. In 1970, Bill ended up in a combined action squad in the Republic of Vietnam.
Let me say a few things before I start my own vignette. I was asked to mention how old I was when I served. So I entered the Navy and became a hospital corpsman when I was just 18 years old. I worked as an anesthesia corpsman at Philadelphia Naval Hospital for about 2 years. In the third year, I went to Camp Pendleton, California, and became attached to the Fleet Marine Force, the 5th Marine Division at that time, 3rd Battalion, 27th Marines. And all of those Marines had just come back from the Tet Offensive. And so although they were bodily functioning, they never slept at night. They sat up on the edge of their racks and smoked and talked. And my task was to listen to them as well as be their corpsman. And then in my fourth and final year as a corpsman on active duty, I went to Vietnam, and like a moth going to the flame. And I was assigned to the combined action group, first combined action group in the southern part of I Corps, and then second combined action group when the first group was deactivated. So I was all of 21 by the time I got there, so I was an old man, and became 22 halfway through my tour. I want to stress one more thing before I read and present to you my story, and that is that a combined action platoon consisted of a reinforced squad of about 10 Marines and a corpsman and 15 to 20 Vietnamese popular force or regional force soldiers, and our task was to every day train them, patrolling during the day in ambushes at night. And we lived in rural Vietnamese villages in and around them. We had no compound, so we were, choose your phrase, outside the wire, in the bush. There was no rear area to which we returned after any period of time. So this was our life every day, month upon month. We slept on the ground in the middle of the day for when things weren't happening and taking turns. But we developed positive relationships with many of the Vietnamese amongst whom we lived. And even though many of them were fighting against us, it's the nature of these wars that we've been fighting since then. So I just need to say that this particular story centers on a critical incident and some subsequent ones, but it's in the context of people I knew. The Vietnamese were not separate. They were culturally other than us, but I had spent nearly a year learning about them, developing relationships with them, and the people who will appear in this story, who are Vietnamese villagers, were people I already knew pretty well. Here we go. So the title is, You Will Kill My Family. The rain doesn't stop. During another endless night of pouring rain and deep darkness, a rocket-propelled grenade is fired in our direction. It explodes in front of a Vietnamese soldier, and he collapses in pieces. He still breathes. Because we are set up only 100 meters from a ville, we gather him in our arms and carry him through the deluge to the closest home. It is a two-room thatched roof home, and under a slight overhang of the roof, I can prop the soldier on his side and begin to see his wounds. Partially out from under the pounding rain, I peel his torn shirt away from the gaping holes in his body. He is bleeding so rapidly and completely. The father of the house, an elderly man, comes out and stands in the rain and mud and screams at me. His Vietnamese is so rapid, I can only tell that he is furious at me. While working on the wounded man, I ask another of our Vietnamese soldiers what the man is saying. You must take this wounded man from my home, or one of my family will die soon if the soldier dies. The father's anger moves me. The intensity of his fear is compelling, but I say, no, I must do this. My hands explore my soldier's terrible wounds, trying to apply pressure, trying to reassure him with ridiculous words of hope and attempted comfort. Within minutes, he dies, and we carry him away. And his Vietnamese friends carry his body gently to be returned to his village. The raging father's words quickly fade in my mind as we resume our place on the perimeter in the unrelenting rain. The dance of hunting and being hunted never stops. Amidst the people who live in the villas, any small dwellings made of stucco and concrete, remnants of the days with the French, are pockmarked with bullet holes from decades of war sweeping through villes where farmers cultivate their rice crops with ancient skills. Hundreds of years old, children try to attend village schools. A few shopkeepers sell limited goods. The people observe through rituals that resonate during the day and night a Buddhist understanding of how life might be. They practice their belief in the face of frequent, unpredictable violence that does not discriminate between innocents and fighters. I learn from the villagers as much as I can. Our task is to understand and persuade them to take sides in this long war. As long as a dark monsoon night that seems endless when you are standing in it, being soaking wet for months, unable to see anything clearly. I tuck the anger of the Vietnamese father in my mind, but quickly move back into a mode of being that characterizes every day and night for me. I had stopped writing in my journal 3 months ago an account of the carnage that is brought to me or visited upon us every day. I keep my rifle clean. My magazines clean and full. When demolition kits with C4 explosive wire and blasting caps are sent out for resupply, and after we distribute the sticks of C4 to be carried by our team, I use the demo kit bags to hold battle dressings. You can cram 20 small battle dressings into a demo kit bag. That which contained the explosive capacity to level a city block back home holds now the means to staunch bleeding wounds. Several weeks after the death of our Vietnamese soldier, I am summoned through a series of shouts. Bác sĩ, La Đài! Doc, hurry this way. On an unusual sunny day, to the side of the Tan Quyết Bridge in Vĩnh Thành, a 10-year-old boy has been carried from across the river and set down on the ground. He was leading a cow back to his family's home in Vĩnh Thành when he stepped on a mine. Barely susceptible fragmentation wounds dot his body, like precise mud splatters. He cannot see me. He is dying quickly. I start an IV line in his left arm. He stops breathing. I try to resuscitate him, but to no avail. And I weep, because I know him. His father is the older man who shouted at me angrily several weeks ago when he walks up to us to take his son's body home. He looks at me accusingly, but he says nothing. It disturbed me even then, as a 22-year-old kid at war, that my decision to ignore a father's plea for his family while doing my work caused this boy's death. But I tuck it away in my mind and heart with a host of other contradictions and absurdities that I had stored up over the year. We were aware of the funeral rites in the village for the boy in the days to follow, but I stayed away. About 2 weeks later, the rain seemed to lift. We walked about in the day with our shirts off. It felt good to leave our boots and socks off to dry our feet in comfort for a couple of hours. wading daily through the water and deep mud of irrigation canals and rice paddies was almost pleasurable with the tropical sun warming us. On such a day as this, we patrolled on the outskirts of Vimtay. As our point man stepped beyond a tree line into an open rice paddy, he surprised five North Vietnamese soldiers in a stand of trees 40 feet away. A young woman in a white shirt, black pants, and conical hat of the villagers was walking away from them with a wooden tray in her hands, a teapot, small dishes in cups on the tray. As the North Vietnamese soldiers raised their weapons, they were quickly shot. I ran to them. Three were dead, two were wounded badly. I requested a medevac for the wounded. I ran to the young woman in the rice paddy. Our Vietnamese team leader and our radio operator came with me. The woman had a small wound in her lower abdomen with no exit wound. She was bleeding to death internally. Our radio operator let me know that the medevac was canceled, and a team of interrogators was hastening out to work on the wounded North Vietnamese soldiers. I held the young woman in my arms as she bled away. I was, as on so many occasions, helpless. I knew her as I knew the boy of a couple of weeks before. She was the daughter of the father who told me I would visit death on his house if I didn't move the soldier dying under the eaves of his thatched roof two-room home on the edge of Vimtay. The woman died. I set her down gently in the muddy rice paddy. She was bringing rice and tea to the North Vietnamese soldiers at midday before she was shot. Within minutes of her death, her family, led by her father, came out to claim her body. Her father looked at me, not having to say a word. I have no doubt that 47 years later, Vimtay is transformed. 40 years after the finish of a long 30 years of war, I am glad that over 50% of Vietnam's people were born after the conclusion of that slaughter. Whatever I managed to learn was gained at too high a cost. So I relish the opportunities today to be in and with other cultures, whether within Somali families here in Manchester, New Hampshire, or the growing immigrant populations of the neighborhood where I live in New Hampshire, or across the oceans in other lands. Now, I am unarmed, and I listen more, and I hope to make amends for my part in senseless war. Thank you.
For more veteran stories, visit vetflix.org. Subscribe, rate, and review at iTunes. And thanks.